This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, it's Tim Echols, Commissioner Echols, in studio in Athens. We do a lot of on-the-road shows. We're in studio today with frequent guest Alan Shedd with Oglethorpe Power. Alan, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for inviting me back.
Alan, is it true that you may be retiring or that you've retired? Or
That's no longer a rumor. I did turn in my notice, and effective January 2nd, I'll be enjoying retired life.
Yeah, and Danny Johnson from Georgia Power. Danny, your department, it's got a long name. What is it called?
We're the Energy Assistance Team for Georgia Power, and we were created in 2017 to really take care of customers who are in the limited to moderate income space, senior citizens and customers who might have a one-time or ongoing need.
You know, we're going to talk about EVs in this segment because in segment two is an interview of my Uber driver from a Colorado trip that I made driving an EV6 and some of his frustrations renting an EV6 from Hertz to do his Uber drives. And then Dr. Daniel Violet from the University of Colorado, Boulder, I guess, the Buffaloes, I guess is what they are, Alan, about rolling energy resources. Alan, let me start with you. These electric vehicles and their very large batteries do represent an opportunity, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, in addition to giving you great range when you're on the road, and by the way, I drive an EV6 too, as you know, that large battery is great not only for helping you, you know, go on trips with an EV, but there is potential to use it, and I say potential with the strongest of words, to help it manage the grid, either to provide power to a house during an outage, for example, or perhaps to help extend the capacity of the grid during a shortage.
Alan, Jeremy Nelms, who works for Flint Energy, drives an F-150 Lightning. Not all of the Lightnings are equipped with this plug-into-the-home feature. It's a little bit more money, and I imagine that option will eventually come down. But is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Well, there are several layers to this. It's called vehicle-to-grid integration. The simplest version of this that my car does is allow me to plug devices into the car. I can run a power saw off of it. You know, we had an event at Road Atlanta a few years back where we ran a coffee maker, you know, while we were, you know, out in the field. So that vehicle-to-home or vehicle-to-appliance feature is it's not just a parlor trick. I mean, there's some real value to it. To scale that up a little bit more, like what the Ford Lightning does, is allow you to use that stored energy in the truck to power your house during a power outage. Now, that takes, you know, additional wiring, additional setup in your house. For safety reasons, you need a transfer switch that prevents you from backfeeding power onto the grid. But all of those features you'll see more and more of on vehicles. Several manufacturers have announced that. Fast forwarding to the future, vehicle to grid is sort of another opportunity where you can use that vehicle to supplement power demands on the grid, to manage grid constraints, to help during those hot summer afternoons. So instead of starting a power plant, perhaps we can call on electric vehicles to help smooth that demand out a little bit. Another interesting opportunity is with school buses. You know, school buses have very large batteries. They're typically used for a very repeatable duty cycle. And during the summer, they're sitting idle most of the time. So maybe there's an opportunity to use those vehicles in that application or during a disaster to provide backup power at a school.
Danny, just about every conference I go to, there's a panel on equity of some sort. And I know that in the EV space, there's been talk about, putting chargers everywhere where everybody could access them and helping low-income people be able to access electric cars. But to be honest with you, and after driving seven EVs myself, I'm not sure that a single mom with two infants needs to be in an electric car that's not a Tesla, that's subject to charging at places that it may be broken. She may be better off in a Prius. I don't know. What do you think?
It's an interesting question, and I tend to agree with you. Part of this, though, is about education. And one of the things I'm proud of that we're doing is not only mobilizing our fleet now with EVs, but we're also looking at underserved communities and making sure that we eliminate those deserts that might be available or out in our communities right now, simply because we're not thinking that people in the limited to moderate income space are interested in EVs. That's a misnomer. We certainly know that once the availability is there, the cost is there, then we got to have charging stations in place to make sure that it's a good proposition for the EV driver.
Yeah, Danny, we've talked with you before about the pay-as-you-go program, the prepay program, and I think your theory is right, is that let's say that we have low-income customers, they go on the prepay program, they're learning what it costs to run their house, they're becoming kind of energy geeks now, and now they develop an interest in something else, like an EV, that could save them money in maintenance, because an EV doesn't have antifreeze,
right.
It doesn't have oil, it doesn't have transmission fluid. So I think it is possible that energy efficiency and the prepay program could actually be a tutor or mentor into something like electric vehicles.
Absolutely. In addition to that, the tools that are online, so that you can track your behavior and the efficiency of that vehicle with your smartphone. And what we know is the more data and the more that really people understand how the product works, then you start to see positive results from that product. And one of the things that my team has learned is get the information out there, create awareness, help customers understand the affordability component of it, and then you see really the benefits for the whole state.
Alan, in segment two, we're going to feature an interview with my Uber driver in an EV6 who was renting that EV6 through Uber, through Hertz, through a special arrangement, and kind of his frustration with Electrify America chargers in Denver not working, and the line that he was having to wait in. He said that Subarus take a very long time to charge and people were leaving the cars. He told me that a Rivian truck actually pulled up to one of these Subarus and pulled it out of the way, and that he's seeing a little bit of road rage out there. You've got the Kia EV6. Why is it that that car charges so fast?
The main reason is design. I mean, it uses an 800-volt battery pack instead of most EVs on the road today are 400, 500 volts. With that higher voltage, you can put more juice in the battery in a shorter period of time. And that makes a huge difference when you're traveling and using, you know, corridor charging.
You and I know Steve Epstein, and he's, you know, given about 20,000 ride shares. He's driving a Chevy Bolt. He swears by it. And he does have a charger at home. My Uber driver in Colorado did not. He lived in a condo, and he was basically using fast chargers for everything. But it really is something that if you're on a time of use rate and you're charging at home, you can really save a lot of money compared to the gasoline that you would be buying.
Even at typical residential rates, you're buying mileage, essentially the equivalent of a dollar a gallon. Now, that's paying 12, 13 cents a kilowatt hour. With off-peak rates where you're paying 4 cents or less, obviously that's even bigger savings. And it really does make a big difference. It's a real pocketbook issue when it comes to just what it costs to drive.
Danny, as you talk to customers out there in the Georgia Power Network, I mean, Georgia Power has a number of different tariffs, and it's confusing for those of us even that live in this world every day. How do you explain all this to people?
So on our website, not only do we have the guidelines for it, but we also use short videos. And what we've learned is one thing to read it, it's another thing to see it. And if you play these short videos, there are educational videos that help you understand really what our tariffs are, what the rates are, and how the customer can benefit best from that chosen rate. As I mentioned, we have 7 residential rates, including in that is our EV charging rate.
The EMCs out there, I'm a member of Jackson EMC, are they doing some creative things to educate their members about electric vehicles?
Well, absolutely. You know, websites, of course, are a great opportunity to share information with our members. But it's sort of an all-of-the-above strategy, whether it's social media or websites or newsletters or meetings. You know, many of the EMCs hold sort of informational sessions for their members or give presentations at civic clubs to tell people about, you know, emerging technologies and specifically electric vehicles.
Danny, as you think about the customers that you're working with, just a final comment about folks maybe that are sitting out there, they're struggling, they're wondering how they're going to pay their bill. What advice do you have for them?
Well, first, the advice that I'd say is don't give up. There's help and assistance out there. You can reach out again to Georgia Power/energy assistance. My team is available. We connect with community action organizations, nonprofits, and faith-based organizations who have benevolent funds who are also willing to help in the community. So there's assistance that's there. There are federal dollars. Just reach out and we'll get them connected.
Well, coming up in our next segment, my Uber driver who was renting from Hertz a Kia EV6 and his experience. And then in the last half of the show today, Dr. Daniel Violet and Rolling Energy Resources and what they're doing with the 10,000 electric vehicles that subscribe to their service. Stick around. Energy Matters is coming right back. Hey, Tim Eccles here for GEM Car Wraps, GEM Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles, so check it out, GEM Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show.
Now I've got this earpiece. Do you want to?
Hey, Tim Eccles back on Energy Matters with Kenny in a Kia EV6 here in Denver, Colorado. He's picked me up from the airport. It's an Uber. How's it going, Kenny?
Doing great, Tim. Nice to meet you.
Well, it's good to have you on Energy Matters. You've been an experienced Uber driver, 14,000 rides?
That is correct. About 14,000 rides with both Uber and Hertz, mostly Uber.
Wow, that's really cool. You know, we had this Lyft Express Drive in Georgia. It's kind of been discontinued, but Hertz has a special deal that if you get an EV, they give you a special rate. Tell us a little bit about that.
I rent it through Uber to Hertz, and my payment goes straight to Hertz, but it is a reduced rate, and it includes commercial insurance. And I still have to pay for the electricity, whether it's overnight in a garage or at a supercharger. I still have to pay for that.
Yeah, so we're in a Kia EV6. This is no shabby EV.
Not at all. It is awesome. I love this. And I also did the same program with the Tesla and Lyft. I've done Lyft and Hertz and Uber.
Yeah, tell me about the difference, you know, that you had with the Tesla versus the Kia EV6 and which one, if you were going to buy one, which one you would get.
I would definitely go, now this is my personal opinion, and I would go with the Kia, because the Tesla, which was a blast to drive and a lot of fun to drive, it is a lighter vehicle, and I had the Model 3. It did not allow me to adjust the suspension. So it was a rough, firm, sports car-like ride, and it was really quick. However, it took almost 50 minutes to go from 20 to 80% at a Tesla pole, and the Tesla poles always worked, and they were nice, and I never had to wait because they were never full. But now the Kia is from 20 to 80% is less than 20 minutes, so it's a lot faster, and I get 100 miles more, even more than that, from 180 to around 313 miles on a full charge on the Kia. So the Kia works better for me. I get longer range, and my charging station for the fast chargers is a lot less time.
What are some of the comments that people give as they hop in your Kia EV6 and you give them a ride?
It's kind of interesting. When they would get in and make comments on the Tesla, it was, oh, I've never been in a Tesla before. This is kind of neat. What a cool screen. They looks like you're driving an iPad. When they get in the Kia, it goes, wow, this is nice. Look at this interior. This is beautiful. What a neat looking car from the outside and all this kind of stuff. So they are a little bit different in their comments and their experience, and it's a lot smoother riding car. It's not quite as quick and fast as the Tesla. However, it is quicker and faster than a normal piston engine. And I'm not racing anybody as an Uber driver anyway. So it works out really good for me, and it's a lot quieter, smoother, and the fit and finish on the interior is better.
You know, you're experiencing out here, because it's a lot colder here than it is in Georgia or Florida or California. You're experiencing this cold effect on EVs. You were telling me that you sometimes lose 100 miles of range. Tell me about that.
Yes, when it gets under 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and even worse probably when it gets under freezing, I lose pretty close to 100 miles on a full charge. And the charger poles seem to go from 180 or 200 kilowatts down to 50 or less. Maybe even I've seen 19 at a fast charging pole. I don't know if it's the pole that's sending out slower or if it's my car receiving it wanting to receive it slower. So I don't know what the issue is technology wise, but I do know what the end result is it's a lot longer to charge.
You don't have a way to charge at your condo. That's a little frustrating to you, you told me. How much more convenient would it be if you could charge at home and come out and have a full charge to kick off your day?
That would be wonderful. That is on me. I live in a condo that does not offer charging, and so a lot of times I'll charge at the end of the night, like I did last night from 11 to 11:30. I just went to sleep and charged my car before I came home. And so this morning I had, you know, fairly full. I had almost 200 miles. It would have been 300, but it was 32 degrees in the morning. Anyway, I would love to be able to have that opportunity, and then I could charge once a day instead of twice a day.
You know, as you were pulling up, I saw a number of EVs picking up passengers. I saw a Nissan Leaf. I saw a Tesla. So are you seeing more and more EVs here in the Denver area?
Yes, we are. And that is actually making a crowded poll of the Electrify and Easy EVgo poles. It's making them more crowded, and many times, I'd say more than 50% of the time, when I get to the charging stations, I have to wait anywhere from 20 to 60 minutes before I can get my chance at plugging in.
You mentioned that Subarus seem to be charging a lot slower, and it's really causing a little bit of road rage, EV road rage. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah, it is. The particular model of that product from you know, it's a SUV. Everybody loves it, except for it takes 2 hours to charge for 180 miles, and mine takes about 20 minutes to charge for that, or actually less if it's only 180 miles. I get 200 to 300. So the problem is they're plug in and they go eat dinner and it's there for 2 hours and there's two or three of them there and it's clogging up the system and everybody's waiting. And then when they're finished fully charged, if they're not back, it just sits there saying, unplug, unplug. And everybody's all mad at them when they walk up. Then I've heard stories about road rage and fights. And one guy just hooked up his truck, his Rivian truck, and put it in through the wheel and drug it right out of the stall because the guy wasn't even there. And it was wet. The cement was wet, so it kind of skidded. He pulled it out of the way and pulled his truck in there. So it is going to be a road rage issue.
Wow. I've never heard of anybody taking a vehicle and pulling it off of a charger. I mean, if you could wave a magic wand and fix the charger situation here in the Denver area, what would that look like?
I think would help a lot. It would help a lot to have parking spaces on each side of the pole. There's always only one entrance and the poles are where they are. And if we had parking places, or if the poles were in an island instead of on the edge of the parking lot, and we could pull up to the other side, if the person on side A is full and he's not there, but it says unplug, I could unplug it and then bring it over to my side and plug it into my car. And then it wouldn't be a road rage issue, and it wouldn't be a waiting issue, because a lot of times those cars are just sitting there and they're done. Or many times they're asleep in the car and it says it's finished and they're sleeping. Well, do I knock on the window and get them mad, or should I just unplug it and plug it into my car if I could pull up close? But I can't.
You're just joining us. I'm talking to Kenny. He's driving me to my hotel for an EV conference I'm going to here in the Denver area. Just another couple of minutes, Kenny. Are most of these drivers that you're seeing at these Electrify America chargers and EVgo chargers, are they Lyft or Uber drivers, or are they just private citizens?
I would say it's pretty close to 50-50%. I don't know if it's more or less. I'd have to pay more attention to it, but my gut feeling is it's a hair more of Uber and Lyft drivers than it is regular people.
You know, before you drove your first EV, because you've used a Tesla, you've used the EV6, what did you think about EVs before you actually drove one? What was kind of your attitude towards them?
Boy, I was real excited to try the Tesla, which was the first EV I drove, and it was the first time I drove it. I was a Uber driver, or still am, but I was renting it through Uber to Hertz, and the biggest problem is it was non-standard in buttonology in the interior, and you almost had to watch a video to understand how to unlock the doors and open the doors and shut the doors. And then also for the Tesla is a big problem with my customer base. They would walk up and just stare at the doors. Where do I push? How do I get? I hate the door handles. On this car, Tim, I don't know if you saw, I made stickers and it says push here to open. And that doesn't even work. Sometimes they just push my sticker and think it's going to open the door. So I've got to redo the stickers and put it actually on the handle itself and say push here, pull here. That's my biggest complaint about that situation. But the performance I really liked. When you get into traffic, you can, and someone pulls out of that lane, you want to get there, you have the power to get there really quick. And, you know, that's a nice thing.
Just another minute. You know, you get the insurance, you get the car, you can use it for personal use. What were you driving personally before you started renting a Hertz Uber car?
It's a minivan.
What year model?
Oh, it's 2001 or something like that, a Honda.
So your ride has greatly been enhanced
Absolutely. And, you know, that gets into your personal, your ego and your personal sense of worth and everything and pride of ownership. And even though I don't own it, when I park it at home or whatever, and I'm proud to drive around and I'm proud to pick up people and see their response and how people enjoy getting in this car. And they say, wow, this is nice. Is this brand new? And I have to tell them it's a rental because they might not tip me because they think, well, you're rich. You can afford something like this.
Well, thanks for being on Energy Matters.
Thank you very much, Tim. Enjoyed talking with you.
Hey, Tim Echols, in the back of an Uber, a Kia EV6. Stick around, another segment coming up on Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities' demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Mr. Echols, this is Christine Turner. I wanted to tell you personally how much I appreciate you help getting our power back on in Locust Grove. We got it back on as soon as you sent the email to the president. It came back on about 10:30 Saturday night, but I didn't get home till 10:30. Staying with my friends, Diane and Johnny Dodd. I think you're friends with your mom and dad that gave you your phone number. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that.
Hey, Tim Echols back on Energy Matters here in Denver at the Denver Tech area with Dr. Daniel Violet. Dr. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
You've got a PhD from University of Colorado. Let's see. That's the Buffaloes, right?
Right.
And you guys have got Coach Prime.
We do.
And, I mean, everybody's kind of gotten interested in Colorado football because of Coach Prime. What's kind of the verdict on Coach Prime?
You know, I think the verdict is out. We were so excited at the beginning of the season. And it was a tough ending to the season. And there's been some other things that, you know, make you wonder a little bit. So, you know, I actually happen to know a guy that played for the Atlanta Falcons. He's a ex-professional football player. And he played with Deion Sanders. And I was asking him the other day, I said, you know, is he going to be able to do this? Is he going to pull this out? He says, yes, I know this guy. He solves problems. He's going to do this. He's not just flash. He's going to make it work. So that's what I'm counting on. I'm a big fan of the CU football.
Well, you are working with a company. You're the director of Rolling Energy Resources. Started back in 2000. You guys do a lot on the planning, evaluating, cost-benefit analysis for utilities, demand-side management. Started with a lot of energy efficiency programs, and you've kind of moved into a lot with electric vehicles. So let's start with energy efficiency. It was important in 2000 and is still important now.
No doubt about it. I mean, energy efficiency and demand-side management are just kind of critical components of a utility providing cost-effective services to ratepayers. It's something that they have to excel at, and they've gotten a lot better at it over the years. So what I think some people don't realize is just during a single day, how much the cost to produce electricity varies from 1 hour to the next hour. So if you're looking at a hot day in the summer, and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 to 7 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 10 times more expensive to produce electricity than it is to produce it at night. And so if you can shift some of that load or reduce some of that load during the peak hours and shift it to the off-peak hours, you can save all the customers of a utility a lot of money. And what we've been working on, and I've been working on this for, you know, 15, 20 years. In fact, I started up the Association of Energy Services Professionals, which is the professional association for the people that work in the field of energy management. And as a group, you know, we've been working really hard to reduce the cost of producing the power that people use. And this is one way to do it. And what I'm working on now with electric vehicles is just extend it.
EVs, it seems like they are a little bit of a liability to the grid. I mean, I'd like to think they eventually become an asset to the grid, but you've got 10,000 EVs in your network, and you can see the state of charge, and you can start and stop the charge if the owner gives you permission. Do you see EVs as a liability to the grid or an asset right now?
Well, I think right now we don't. There's only a few utilities where there's so many EVs on the grid right now that it's really a concern to them. But I think in 5 years from now, it'll be a concern to every utility. But, you know, I'm kind of neutral about it. I mean, if you think about the challenges utilities have faced, the EV challenge isn't that much different than the air conditioner challenge of the 60s and 70s. When we were putting in air conditioners across the country, we were dramatically increasing loads in peak periods. And the load shapes were changing substantially, and we had to figure out what to do with them. And we came up with energy efficiency ACs. We came up with load management for ACs. We had smart thermostats to help manage the load. And we solved the problem. And that's what will happen with EVs. It's just, it's not unique. Utilities solve these kinds of problems all the time. And we want to give the utilities the tools they need to solve those problems.
There's a tremendous amount of load in the queue right now, and not just Georgia, but quite a few states. Over the last decade, load's been kind of flat. And now, all of a sudden, things seem to be really ramping up. You've got these crypto mining facilities and data centers and a lot of new businesses. You've got all this EV load. Is this something that utilities are concerned about?
Load is increasing. The fastest load growth we're seeing at a utility right now is in the EV sector, and they know they have to do something in terms of managing the load. But when you talk about opportunities, there was a recent study done by the Lawrence Berkeley National Labs that shows that even with very high levels of penetration of EVs, if you manage the load of EVs smartly to off-peak charging, you can reduce the average rate that every ratepayer pays. So there are opportunities. It isn't a challenge that can't be met and can't provide benefits to every ratepayer at a utility.
Let's talk a little bit about what Rolling Energy Resources is doing with these 10,000 cars across the country. Folks are familiar with the OnStar system. Non-EV drivers probably aren't aware of what a state of charge would be. But the first time I saw state of charge from a dashboard was I was in Montreal looking at this TO taxi that was running. This was in 2016. They were running Kia Souls that had about 100-mile range. And I went into their dispatcher office. He could see where all of his taxis were, and he could see the state of charge. And this was in 2016.
What we do is we tend to work with the electric utilities, and we contact EV owners on their system, and we ask the EV owners if they want to participate in the load management programs. And they can decide to say yes, or they can decide not to participate. And if they decide to participate, we work with the EV owners to keep charging off of the on-peak hours, the most expensive hours. And we also help the owners figure out how to charge their cars so that they pay the least amount in terms of charging. And we provide lots of other information to EV owners. How many miles a week they tend to travel, what their average state of charge is at 8 o'clock at night, what the average state of charge is at 8 in the morning. And we give them information that can help them plan out how to use their cars.
In the last segment, before you came on, I featured a Uber driver here in Denver that I actually rode from the airport to this Marriott that I'm staying at, and he was in a Kia EV6, lived in a condo, did not have charging in his condo, is living off of fast chargers. He's renting this car from Hertz. He really wishes he could charge overnight. He just doesn't have a way to do that because the condo won't put chargers in.
Well, we're trying to help him. I mean, we're working with multi-family properties. And since we use the technology inside the car, we don't have to build expensive technology outside the car from a charger framework. So we can work with the charging network by just what the OEMs put in the car. And so all he needs to do, if he wants to log on to one of our load management programs or to work with us directly, is to just have a plug-in. And if he's happy with a slow charge, an 8-hour or 10-hour charge overnight, if he's got a plug-in that he can plug into, we can work with that. We can charge the car. And we can, if the building owner wants to charge them for the electricity just for EVs, we can track the kWh and the kW, and they can pay the owner of the building, or they can compensate the utility. And the utility can see this, and he will give them a rebate. So we think that we have a good solution for multifamily buildings that hopefully will take off.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Dr. Daniel Violet. He's the director of Rolling Energy Resources. I'm in Colorado, about to speak at an EUCI conference just across the street. Let me ask you about these 10,000 cars in the state of charge when they get home at night. We say on this radio show all the time that, 80% of people charge at home. That is an important time. So let me ask you this. When they get home from work at 8 o'clock at night, or when they get in from the day, is their battery depleted or is it over 50%?
Typically, it's pretty high. I mean, it's 40 to 50%. And so this is good because this means that if we want to defer charging from 8 o'clock at night for some reason, say there was a fire downtown that threatened a transformer, and the utility says we need to reduce load at these centers. And typically we can do it because there's not that many cars who have run the battery charge down so low that we don't want to interrupt their charging. But the nice thing about what we're trying to do today with utilities is if somebody's concerned about their charge level falling below, say, 20%, they want to have a minimum 50-mile range on it, we can make sure that it stays at that percent. We can work with the owner and the utility to make sure there's a minimum charge all the time in their car.
You know, as an EV driver now for 11 years, on my 7th EV, I have rolled into the house with a little light blinking, where my state of charge, getting in from the office 54 miles in my older Nissan Leaf, the thing's got 7 miles when I get in. But, I'm comfortable with that because I know the car, and I don't want to have to stop on my way home and charge. I want to get home, have dinner, be with the family. So I know my car, and I know how it operates.
I think that's great. But if you participated in our program, and if you only had 7 miles in there, last thing you would want us to do is to not charge a car. And so we make sure that if somebody comes in with your situation, we make sure that the car is being charged. Because basically the utilities right now are providing people with their transportation fuel. And that's a big responsibility. And they need to exercise that responsibility appropriately.
I got to keep you over another segment. This is Dr. Daniel Violet. He's a University of Colorado PhD economist. I'm going to bring him back. We're going to talk more about Rolling Energy Resources, more about demand side management, more about some of the work that that their company does. This is Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters from Denver, Colorado.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill, simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at SolarSunWorld.com. SolarSunWorld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles back. Another segment with Dr. Daniel Violet. He's University of Colorado, PhD in economics. Where'd you do your undergrad?
I went to Arizona State University.
Dr. Adam Orford, who teaches energy law at UGA, is an undergrad from Arizona State University as well. So he's a frequent guest on our program. So did you get a master's at another location or just straight to your PhD?
I got my master's and PhD both at the University of Colorado.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on the show today. Rolling Energy Resources, y'all started out working on energy efficiency. Are you still doing a lot with energy efficiency? Or I guess really all this management you're doing on these electric cars is still energy efficiency.
It is energy efficiency, but how Rolling Energy Resources got started is we were all at a company called Apex Analytics, and Apex Analytics does the EE and the DR programs, demand response programs, and we got this idea and we developed it under Apex Analytics, and after about 6 months, it looked like such a good opportunity that we rolled it into a separate company. So we split it off, and myself and Scott and some others went with the new company.
It seems like these vehicles, these electric vehicles with these big batteries, that they are a tremendous grid asset to be able to act as a generator in a home like the F-150 Lightning claims to be able to do. And then as we saw with the LADWP, the Los Angeles utility, they are on a daily basis putting energy back on the grid in three Nissan Leafs, really just testing the car, testing the device, and it's getting ready for the future. Do you feel like vehicle to grid is going to be a thing one day?
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be big. And I think that, vehicle to grid is great, but vehicle to home is almost as important, because if you can charge up your home appliances and your AC unit, you don't necessarily need to push it back to the grid. And so there's a number of different ways that I think that EVs are going to be valuable to the utility.
And I'm speaking tomorrow at the EUCI event, and I'm going to be kind of going through the evolution of electric vehicles starting in about 2011. I mean, obviously, Toyota RAV4 was before that. EVs have continued to grow. I don't think they're going to be as disruptive as quick. I think UBS had said that they expected them to be disruptive in 2031, and I just don't know that it's going to be that quick. What do you think?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define disruptive. I mean, the utility planning departments are going to be disrupted in 2 or 3 years because they need a 5-year lead time to build out the distribution infrastructure to support the cars that are going to be on the grid in 2031. And so right now, up until now, I don't think the utility planners I've worked with have been too worried about it. But about now, they're starting to think about it pretty seriously and trying to think about what they're going to do. And they're looking at the investments they need a 5-year lead plan for. And there's a lot of money in those investments. And so we've got to be working on it now. I think that EV sales have tapered off a little bit. I think they're going to ramp up. I think we're going to have some major technical advances in batteries. You're going to have batteries you can switch in and out. And I think that we're going to have a faster growth in EVs than some people do. That's just my opinion.
You live in Colorado. I live in Georgia. Both of our states are projected to have about 1 million EVs by 2030. I just returned from a trip to California where I took 39 Georgians out there to really see the charging infrastructure and how California is really building big now. Managed charging, they'll go into an apartment complex, they'll do 50 level 2 chargers on a PowerFlex charging management system made by EDF. And it seems like in Georgia, we're still building really small. And it sounded like from talking with the Uber driver that I had today, the non-Tesla charger network is still lacking out here.
I think that's definitely true. It hasn't lived up to what we hoped we would get from it. But on the other hand, Tesla is going to open up their entire charging network to all the vehicles on the EV vehicles in the market. And I talked to some Tesla owners, and they're a little concerned about that because they sometimes have to wait in lines. And I'm not sure that they want to wait in line behind a Toyota at a Tesla charger. And that could be what happens. But we're going to see a lot of integration. We're going to see the technologies that we provide, which provides charging without a lot of capital investment in infrastructure. We're going to see fast charging. We're going to see the kinds of things that we do. We're going to integrate it with the charging equipment. And, I think the problems are going to be solved. I think we're on a path and a defined path to kind of make things a lot better in the next 4 to 5 years.
Let's say that one of our listeners wants to be more energy efficient. They want to, maybe they've got some tax money or something that they want to invest in their home. What do you think is the low-hanging fruit for energy efficiency for a homeowner?
Kind of weatherization and insulation and making sure that you have a tight home is probably the first thing to do. But a lot of homes are there now, and so you've got to kind of look at what you've invested in. I think efficient appliances are big. AC units are big, efficient AC units. Heat pumps are getting better all the time. We see heat pumps as the energy efficiency measure that looks like it's going to account for the biggest impact over the next 5 years. And I think customers can take advantage of the rebates and do well.
You mentioned in the last segment about the air condition boom that happened and how utilities were trying to control those a little bit back in the day. You might have a cell phone device connected to it. Now it's much more sophisticated using a smart thermostat and a smart meter. And it gives the homeowner a lot of flexibility to opt out of events. I really think that these smart thermostats represent a tremendous amount of opportunity for the ratepayer and for the utility, being able to curtail that air condition for 15 minutes during an event. We pre-cool the house. The customer doesn't even know a temperature difference happened, because I really think smart thermostats are an amazing thing.
Well, I agree. And actually, the smart thermostat was in some way the ideal for what we were looking at with electric vehicles. I mean, you're expecting a big storm in Georgia. We can make sure that you get your battery up to the charge level you wanted. You can pre-charge before that event to make sure that you're ready if there's something that happens during the event. We can feather EVs, meaning we can take all the EVs on a feeder and make sure they don't all come on at the same time. We can have one come on in 15 minutes, another come on in the second 15 minutes. But really, we're kind of patterning what we're doing off of what we've seen smart thermostats do.
I think about Amazon and the Rivian vans that they're getting, and we're, through Georgia Power, working with a lot of last mile delivery companies like FedEx and UPS and Amazon to provide them with an attractive overnight charging rate. But we need this technology that you're talking about. We don't need every delivery truck in Atlanta to be charged at 11:01. We need to feather it, as you said. How sophisticated is feathering, and what do you need to be able to do that?
Not that much, really. I mean, we need to know what the state of charge is on the batteries. We need to know how long it takes to charge a battery, and we can do it with the technology we have. We can do it now. It's not that hard to do. We can make sure that, and how we would typically do it is we do it on half-hour increments, because we only ping cars every half hour. We try to not continuously communicate with the car, because that can present problems on its own. And so since we ping every 30 minutes, we tend to look at things as 30-minute intervals. But it's relatively easy to do on 30-minute intervals right now.
Just a couple more minutes left in this show with Dr. Daniel Violet. As you think about EVs for the future, where we're going with electric transportation, what are some of the things that you're really looking forward to?
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of improvements in battery technology. We may even be changing the technology we use. But some of the cars I've seen that allow you to have a spare battery and just exchange it with what you have in there. I think those are going to be game changers for the EV industry. And people are so concerned about range anxiety and charging issues that if we solve those issues, that'll result in great strides.
I was in Taiwan a couple months ago, and they have mostly gas scooters. They have 14 million scooters, but they've got one EV company that's kind of emerged, and you swap out the battery, just like you were saying, and they have a wall of these batteries that Thai Power will tap into. So it's this scooter battery demand side management. How cool is that?
I think that's great. I mean, I kind of wonder if we could do that with cars. I mean, maybe not. I'm not sure that we have enough cars in a single place to create a large battery wall, but maybe with some of these fleets.
Well, how can folks find out more about Rolling Energy Resources?
Well, we have a website. It's just rollingenergyresources.com.
And how about you? You have an email. Folks might be able to email you.
Yeah, it's dan.violette. Last name is V as in Victor, IOLETTE, @ rollingenergyresources.com.
Well, great. I really appreciate you being on Energy Matters today, and good luck with all you're doing out here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, Tim Eccles from Colorado. Beautiful place, Rocky Mountain High. Gotta love me some John Denver. Hey, thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate you. You can always go to anywhere you get your podcast and search for Energy Matters with Commissioner Eccles. I hope you have a great weekend, everyone.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.